is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1029. Welcome to 2023, everyone. It's the Relevant Podcast here in Orlando. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Austin, Texas, author, speaker, podcaster, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
And from Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, the Derek Miner.
Hello.
Oh, my gosh.
Guys, we did it.
We did it.
We did it. Another year.
Wow.
Another year in the books and another one off to a great start.
Remember when you were a kid and you're like, I don't want to leave the year. And now as an adult, you're like, let's come on 2023. Let's do this.
Yeah. Why is it now every year we look back on like, at least that one's over.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, ever since about 2016, it's been one of those like, yeah, okay, well, next exactly. year's going to be better.
like we hit bottom, right? Like it bottomed out.
Take us back a few years, Cameron, maybe 2014. Yeah. I don't know.
No, but I'm stoked about this year.
Why?
Look, I mean, here's the thing. We're already getting, I don't know about you guys. I already set some resolutions and I'm doing something different this year.
Oh, I can't wait to hear. Whoa,
where okay. usually you come in hot.
Yeah.
Right? You come in hot from the new year. You got a long list of just stuff you want to correct. The great thing about resolutions, it's like I could stop eating sugar at any point.
Right.
But setting a resolutions really allows me to binge the last week of December.
Exactly.
And in my mind, I'm like, I'm getting out of a system. It's basically like in the movies from like the 1960s when a kid would, you know, their parents would catch them like behind the garage smoking a cigarette. And as a punishment, they would make him smoke a whole case and get sick and never want to do it again. That's been my mindset for the last week of December of like, all right, all the sweets, all the cakes and everything. I'm going to gorge myself because one, I'm cleansing the system and come January. And it didn't work. It just made me more addicted. And now the sugar crash is really devastating my insulin levels. This year I've decided to sandbag a couple resolutions, wow. Right? Because the
just
problem,
to kind of feel good that you're knocking them off the list. You're succeeding.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Okay. Exactly. It's like, I want to come into 2023. I want to start this year. And I want my eyes to feel very rested. It's a whole body. You know, I'm going to be working out. I'm going to be eating no sugar. And my eyes are going to be the best ever again. Because I've decided reading no books in January. It's going to be almost a reading free month. I've resolved. You know, that's the key. Is just a couple sandbags in there to keep the spirits
that's
up.
That's true.
You know?
So you're like the exact opposite. Got it.
Yeah, I got you. It makes sense. So then that way, if you mess up on the other ones, you can at least say you achieved something, right? Mm-hmm. That's the goal.
Exactly. No one wants to start off the year feeling like a failure. Mm-hmm. At least you're like, well, I'll tell you this. I didn't even crack a book all of January. So say what you will about my resolve.
Some people are like, okay, I'm gonna make my bed every morning. Me, I'm just going to get out of bed every morning. There you go. I kept my resolution.
Yeah.
Got
starting
out of bed.
With a win will help you throughout the rest of the
year.
So find something low bar. That you're going to hit.
Yes.
Okay, I like it.
Like what would, Jamie, if you had to just using that strategy, what would a resolution be for you?
Like the lowest bar possible would be like, oh, I'm going to feed my children every day. Like, you know, like you already have to. So it's like, I'm just going to make sure that, and then by the end of January, I'm like, done. Kill the resolutions, you know?
They're well fed and they're on their own for the rest of the year. They can fend for themselves right. When it comes to food. I did my good deed and I resolved to do it.
I took
so.
Care of my kids for a month. I want to hear Derek's low bar.
I'm going to stay on social media for hours at a time.
On social media for hours.
Because it helps
hours,
you be informed.
I'm just going to. Just, I want to be informed, right? I want to be informed. I want to know what's trending so that I could be able to, you know, build my
gauge
business,
the
gauge my culture, good and understand what's going on.
In all seriousness, do you guys make New Year's resolutions? And did you make one this year?
I've given up.
Given up.
I don't.
I've given up.
No.
I was going to say, because of what Jesse said earlier, it's like, why wait till January? Like, if there's something I want to change in my life, just do it when you have the idea. Like, don't like with this arbitrary thing.
Yeah.
I in fact, like in early.
And you're super disciplined, Cameron.
I'm all in or all out. I'm either very disciplined or very undisciplined. I cannot do managing balance very well. I am all in or all out. But so like in early December, I was like, man, I've gotten too fat. So I went to my doctor, met with my nutritionist, and she was like, why do you want to start now? Why don't you just do it after the holidays? And I was like, why do I want to get fatter? Like, let me just start now. So it's like, well, you know, so I've been eating healthy for a couple of weeks at this point. I got a head start on other resolution people. So anyway, yeah, that's me. It's like, I don't do it arbitrarily in January. It's just whenever. But Jesse, do you?
Well, I mean, I'll set like micro goals for like a week or two, mm-hmm. you know? I got to live my life, okay? Like, life's, you get so many spins around the sun, you know? How many do you want to spend deprived of things you enjoy, right? Like, you know, Cameron, you go all in or all out. Mm-hmm. I really try for that moderation, because if I'm all in on some terrible diet or something, or sleep routine that I just hate, like, I know it's good for me to go to bed early and to wake up early and not rush out the door. I get it. It's better for me just as a human. But I like staying up late and I like sleeping in, and I don't want to live my life doing things just to deprive myself of basic things of enjoyment. So I could try to pepper in, you know, I'll go a couple of days doing this and that, but I'm not a big, like, you know, overhaul everything. I don't know. I just feel like,
see, I'm the opposite, because I'm like, think like me with eating or whatever. It's like, okay, I can drop, if I'm super aggressive and I'm doing it really intentionally with my nutritionist and doctor, I can drop 40 pounds in like a few months. And then slowly over the next 3 years, I just enjoy life and gain it all back. And then I'll drop it again. And so it's like, I like the bursts of discipline, and then I don't have to have discipline all the other times, you know? So anyway, teach his own.
Yeah, that's like, if I'll go to the gym, but immediately when I get home, I'm going to offset it by eating pizza. And I just try to maintain the balance.
Because you think you deserve it. You're like, I just worked out, so I can do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about. Like, if I'm just like, I'm just going to work out and not have any fun and not go out and not eat pizza and not do other things I like. Well, guess what? I don't enjoy that. Mm. But I will earn the things that, my fun stuff, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's all I'm
saying.
It's
crazy, because I think me and Cameron are very similar, and then you two are very similar to wifey. Mm-hmm. So that makes some very, because my wife is like, she'll go to the gym, and then when she get back, she like, all right, bet. You know, she makes desserts as well. She's a baker. So she's like, all right, cool, I'm making these cupcakes. And she just made cupcakes for the whole house. And then I'm trying to be like Cameron, and I'm trying to be like mad disciplined. So it's almost like, listen, y'all, I'm about to tell y'all right now, look, everybody that's out there, that if you want to be fit up into a certain age or whatever, don't marry somebody that can cook.
That's
true. I'm just
going
to tell y'all that now. Just don't do it. Because my wife is like, yo, when I say she can cook, she like can cook. So it's like, man, you come in the house and she's like, hey, I just made these cheesecake brownie Rice Krispie treat pies that I'm trying out for our new desserts for the restaurant. And I'm like, and what am I supposed to do with this? Oh, just take a little nibble. And mm-hmm. before that, it's like, I'm just face first in all of the sugar. Yeah. Like, so
that's the same way over here, Derek. Yeah. Same way. Aaron cooks and I'm like, babe, I'm eating chicken and veggies. That's it. Chicken, breast, grilled, and some steamed veggies. That's all I want this week. And I come home and it's like curry simmering. And then we've got, I've got these enchiladas I made. And what are you supposed to do? You got to eat it. You don't want to be rude to the chef.
But it's like one of those internet stories you stumble on every once in a while. And it's like some 90-year-old guy, you know, who's like passed away and secretly has squirreled away like $15 million, some huge fortune. And it's like he worked to the last day of his life and drove the same truck and wore the same jeans since 1974. He was so frugal, but he squirreled. And it's like, well, what was the point, man?
Right.
Upgrade the jeans, homie. You squirreled away $15 million. Now you're dead. Now who cares?
Right,
like you could have upgraded that pickup.
Yep,
you know? Yep. That's all I'm saying. You got to live your life.
I read that exact story, Jesse, last week, and it was an old man who hadn't died yet, but he was in his late 80s or something like that. And he worked as a janitor at a school his whole life, and he saved like a couple of million dollars. And what he lived the way you're talking about. And the what he did is before he passed away, he paid for college tuition for an entire class at the school he was the janitor at.
Oh my God.
Scott Stotts.
He's Scott Stotts did.
And I look, and so mad it's like, respect. Okay. Mad respect. But
so that's
mad
what his respect. Mindset was. I want to be frugal to bless others
he
one day.
He wants to help other people.
I'm just saying, you can still do that. But you could have retired, my dude, and just put in a hedge fund or something. Like, I'm just saying, there's a way.
Eat some ice cream every once in a while.
You don't have to, you don't have to deny yourself of memories. That's what I'm saying. And that's what that's how I justify when I'm eating a pizza at midnight.
Just letting y'all know. And this is why I don't make resolutions. Like, because I already know I'm going to make this fitness resolution, and she's going to hear this podcast, and she's going to make that exact thing that I said to make, and she's gonna be like, hey, how about you try it? Like, at one point in time when we first got married, I used to get angry because I thought she was sabotaging me, but then I realized that she just wants to live a happy life.
Yeah.
And actually the beauty of that is that actually helped me start living a more happy life, because I would definitely be the janitor guy who saved up a couple $1 million and then I'm about to die and I'm like, oh, what do I do with the money? I guess I'll just put some kids through college. Like, that's me. So, I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
Here's my 2023 thing. And this is real talk. Cameron, I feel like you're someone who's good at this. You seize experiences and opportunities that come your way.
100%.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because
seize the day. Carpe diem.
If you read, if you hear any of these interviews with somebody who's like super, super successful, right? The Steve Jobs, the Billy, like the people who really grinded and did big things. Most of them say the same thing when they're asked, hey, what would you have done differently? Or if you told your 30-year-old self or your 40-year-old self, give them a piece of advice. Most of them would have said, hey, take that trip, mm-hmm. take a day off and go hang with the family, mm-hmm. go, ease up on yourself, take the foot off the gas here and there. Most of them all say the same thing. I'm just heeding their advice by trying to take time off.
I like it.
And not work as
hard. I like it.
I'm with it.
I'm listening to Steve Jobs here, okay? Just lay off. That's why I'm taking the day off and eating pizza at 3 o'clock in the morning.
So your New Year's resolution is seize the day more often.
Lazier.
Work less. Yeah, work less. Got it. More vacation.
Get lazier.
Okay, I like it.
I like it.
Yeah,
I want it.
I'm just listening to the business masters.
Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talk to one of our favorite pastor, authors, speakers, Derwin Gray. Joins us. In new year, we talk about some good stuff that we should maybe aspire to in this year. So yeah, don't miss that. Also, at the end of the show, we have a game that we've never done before. It's a look back, but it's not a look back at 2022. It's an audio experience, an extravaganza. You don't want to miss it. That's coming up at the end of the show. You don't want to miss that. All right, but stay tuned. Right now, up next, it's Slices. Listening to Jordana, the song is S-Y-T, and yes, at the beginning of that break, I did say audio extravaganza. If that doesn't keep you tuned in, I don't know what will.
The wait is officially over. Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, is out now. Following up on her Grammy-nominated debut album, My Jesus, her sophomore project is jam-packed with 16 songs and features guest artists including Chris Tomlin, Lainey Wilson, and Jordan Davis. Blending her love for God with her roots in all things country, Ann is a true rebel in modern music. Be sure to check out Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, available now everywhere you listen to music.
Okay, it's time for the very first edition, the 2023 edition of
Slices.
What do you have, Jesse?
Guys, big changes are coming. And I'm actually kind of mixed on this one, okay? Netflix, well, first off, the whole entertainment industry is kind of, the business model has really been rattled.
Right.
Right? People aren't going to the movies anymore. Yeah. you know, people don't know really what the advertising models are. You know, all these corporate, all these like big, there's all these big mergers, companies like Disney, you know, who traditionally have just been cash machines. Their stock is plunging. Everyone's figuring out, everyone's trying to figure out ways to fix the business model because it's pretty broken. Mm-hmm. Well, Netflix is going to be instituting some big changes this year, mainly when it comes to password sharing. Now, how it works is right now they haven't really cared about password sharing, and early on in their services days, they actually kind of passively like encouraged it. You know, they were, when asked directly about it, Ted Sarandos kind of shrugged his shoulders and, you know, didn't really vocally oppose it. He sort of had a plausible deniability with his approval, with their approval of it, but they also didn't actively discourage it. Well, times are changing.
There's like a tweet in 2018 from Netflix that said something like, saying I love you is sharing your password or something like that. Mm. It was like, yeah. Netflix was absolutely encouraging it 3 years ago.
Yeah. And that was a time when it was sort of an arms race to see how many, you know, kind of, even if they weren't subscribers, how many people are following your content and how many people are interested in it and would be willing to pay for it down the road. Well, 2023 is here, and so are some changes on Netflix. Yikes. This is the year where they're cracking down on password sharing. And how they're going to do it is they are going to ask like the primary account holders there's going to be like a verification code that will be sent out if someone outside, I guess, your IP address or however they determine a certain number of devices at a location, you'll have to use a verification code to give that person permission, and likely soon will be charged more, or there will be an additional tier to be able to share your password. Now, I share my password, okay? And I'm a beneficiary of shared passwords on other platforms. I am pro password sharing up to this point. But I will say this. It does get you out of a couple awkward scenarios. And can I run them by you really quick? Sure. Because
yes, please.
Run them.
I share my password with some family members for some services. And, you know, sometimes, you know, there is a functionality where if they're watching, you're watching, and a kid's watching on an iPad or something, you get kicked out. It's an awkward text to send to someone who you're sharing your password with to ask them to stop watching a show, right? It's a terrible... I've been in that situation several times where I am locked out because I've shared it with too many people and they're all watching. And I'm like, well, I got to find something else to watch, I guess, because I would rather...
Yeah, you're non-confrontational. Not send the text. Yeah, yeah.
I would not send the text to be like, hey, man, I really want to catch up on this Pepsi documentary about the Harrier jet. Would you mind shutting down Coco Melon for my niece or whatever? It's not my niece, but you get it. Like, I don't want to be put in that position. So it saves you that. But the main thing it saves from, and this is a scenario, I may have brought this up before in the pod, I can't remember, but I find myself in this situation. I've been on both sides of this situation. It's the Airbnb situation.
Yeah.
You see this at hotels too.
Yeah.
Okay. 100%. We have to talk about this. Yeah. Okay. You go to Airbnb and it's night one. Everyone's settled in. He had a great first day at wherever you are. Time for a little Netflix. Just kind of hang out. You turn it on and you notice that the previous guest is logged in and you see their icon. You see their whole families, all their little icons. Now you have the option there. On a lot of devices, I don't know if you guys realize this, it's not easy to log out of Netflix. The interface makes it challenging sometimes to log out. One, you have to log out. Two, you got to use that terrible remote that has no like keypad on it. And you got to use the arrow to punch in your old email, your email address, and remember your Netflix password, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got to remember to log out at the end of the week. It's a whole thing, especially using the remote. I hate using the little arrows on half these TVs. The other option is you just, hey, I'll pop in under Uncle Fred. It doesn't seem like he's watched it. I've been looking at what they've been watching. He hasn't watched the latest episode in like 2 weeks. If I just sneak in and watch my show under Uncle Fred's profile, how long will it be till Uncle Fred even notices? And will he even care? Now, having been on the other side, having been left the TV logged in on, it's extremely violating when you go into your recent views. And it's like, wait a minute. I don't watch Selling Sunset. What is this? Who is this person?
First of all, you should. It's fantastic.
Four episodes of Selling Sunset last night. you feel extremely violated. You feel like someone went into your home and was just rifling through your things.
That's true.
But I've done it. I've done it. So for this reason, I'm pro the password share breakdown. Jamie, let's say you check into an Airbnb or hotel. You log on. It's someone else's Netflix. Do you go through the whole rigmarole of logging out and logging in, or are you just watching whatever? Are you going into their profile?
I'm just watching whatever's available because, listen, I probably don't even know the email. It's probably my husband's password. I have no idea what the password is. And so why would I put myself through all that? Netflix is on. I'm just going to watch it.
Do you feel weird when you're in a stranger's profile watching something?
I feel like they should have taken it down if they didn't want me to use it.
Derek, where are you at on this issue?
I'm watching.
You just pick a profile. And
I'm so happy that I didn't have to put my own Netflix password in there so someone could do that to me.
Yep.
So definitely. I'm like, thanks, Jesse.
But you guys are saying this instantaneously. I am conflicted. 100%. I'm conflicted when I'm
Not at all. I have no conflict.
It's like sometimes I'm viewing, I'm like, this person has terrible taste. Like, this person likes the worst
movies. But usually I would just, I'm already watching something. So I'm going to I'm just going to type it in.
Man, I know, it could be the host of the Airbnb. That's how I rationalize it.
Oh, so maybe the host did that. You know it's not the host.
No, I don't.
You know it's the previous
guest. I don't know that.
Because it doesn't say.
Jesse, I do have a question about the password sharing. So there's six people in my family. They have devices and computers or older. They all use our Netflix. Does that, like, if Caden's at college, my son, and he's using my Netflix, is that a problem?
Yes. It has to be the people in your home. It'll be the people in your home can use it unlimited. But if it's somebody not on your IP, somebody at college, they're going to get charged. So
he's going to have to get his own Netflix.
They're saying, you know, they raise their prices like $17.99 or whatever. You know, they have now the ad supported cheaper tier. But what they're saying is that it'll be like $5 a month to share your password per person you're sharing it with, kind of a thing.
Okay.
So it'll be cheaper for him to just do that. But it's a way for them to monetize your son, you know, without having to make him get his own full account. So. It's happening.
But it alleviates the Airbnb awkwardness, you know? And to all the people that I've just creeped around and judged your viewing habits, I'm sorry.
See, I don't spend that much time looking at their viewing habits. I just look for my show and dive in. Oh, I do. Okay.
Why? Yeah, that's what I'm like, Jamie. It's like, I'm looking for my show. Your stuff's in the way. I don't care what you're watching.
No, I have a whole image. I go into all of them, every member of the family.
And then you try to like make up stories about them.
It's so weird.
I just want to know who these people were that was sleeping in the same room I was.
So weird.
And I, in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, the dad really likes raunchy Adam Sandler films. Okay, noted. I'm getting a picture. He likes those like weird survival shows. Okay, he's you know, got a little outdoor kick. I see. Went back to Sandler movies here. You know, it looks like, you know, maybe
too much time, Jesse. Just dive in and watch.
Yeah, just watch your show.
Who cares?
You know, the wife is really into the Studio McGee. She's heavy into design stuff. You know, but she likes Love Is Blind. She likes a little drama. You know, wonder how that dynamic is. She doesn't seem like a big Adam Sandler fan. I wonder. I don't know. I'm making whole scenarios about their marriage here. You know,
do you and your wife have separate profiles?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Jamie, you don't?
Everybody. I have a separate profile. My wife has one, and my kids all have one.
How many can you have? Because, you know, we have four kids, so they all have their profile, and then Aaron and I have one profile.
I think you get five.
We're at max. Somebody's got to share at the Ivy House.
It'd be one of the kids sharing, because the last thing I want to watch is Nigerian soap operas. My wife is addicted to them joints. It's just crazy. Them joints got everything. They got magic. They got drama. It's everything. Sometimes I just walk in that mug. I'm just like, yeah, I'm cool. Just let me know when you're done here. And then that'll be that.
But Aaron and I don't watch much TV separately. Like, I don't know why. We watch most TV together. So I guess it's okay.
We don't watch TV together at all. We'll watch movies together, not TV.
We watch TV together. My problem is my whole family's on the same because I got little kids, you know, and it's a lot of like Lego and, you know, Barbie and stuff. Here's the issue. I had to make my own account because most of the stuff I watch with my wife or we'll watch like Floor is Lava together. We have like the family account. But I like to, late night, I like to fire up some weird alien documentaries and stuff, you know? And my poor 7-year-old daughter wakes up in the morning to fire up Barbie and she gets a big thumbnail of like an alien autopsy blasted her first thing. So I had to set up a separate account just for weird alien documentaries. It's like a whole nother one.
And to me, that's my personal joy of like logging into someone else's Netflix, knowing that I'm just going to watch weird anime. So it's like whatever they're watching, next thing you know, there's just going to be a weird anime pop up at their house. I'm like, I'm happy to bless you, you know, with my Marvel movies and my weird anime. So that's, it's a joy.
It's very violating. When I'm they wake up in the morning and they're like, someone watched 6 hours of some weird anime and Nigerian soap operas on her account last night. It seems like a massive violation.
That happened to me. We did an Airbnb of a cabin and I was intentional to log out of our Netflix and everything, but I forgot about the downstairs TV. So when I got home, like the next family started, I mean, it screwed up my algorithm for a month. Like the stuff that they were doing, I was trying to get rid of it. And it was like, yeah, never again.
Can you go and log them off or you just have to live with it?
Nah, you can log them off.
No, yeah, you can kick off on the website. You can kick off locations. Okay. So,
but then it's a whole thing. Then you got to re-log in everywhere. It's a whole thing. Just don't find, just, I think Netflix didn't really care about the profits. They're just like, we don't want any more awkward Airbnb scenarios for our customers. Too many people have suffered this indignity. We have to fix this.
I agree.
All right, what do you have, Derek?
There's a phenomena that's happening with travel nurses. So a lot of travel nurses during the pandemic, you know, obviously being a nurse was, I mean, we needed nurses heavy. Mm-hmm. Well, what's happened with a lot of these nurses that are travel nurses, they sign on with these big bonuses. And then what would happen is now that we don't need as many travel nurses, their pay is getting cut in half. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of crazy to think. And this day and age, like that's where we're starting to see this recession kick in. And I'm really hoping that everybody right now that we're all batting down the hatches and making sure that we're taking care of our finances. This is real personal to me because everyone knows I'm into finance and all those different things. And I've watched, you know, my wife have to shift jobs and I've seen a lot of people shifting jobs, but this is really alarming. Like how in the world can you sign someone on and then slash their pay like literally almost in half?
There's, and it's happening to nurses or is it beyond that?
Travel nurses. So specifically travel nurses, right? So like those nurses that would, where they would say, hey, come, we're contracting you out to come to, like if you live in Alabama, we're contracting you out to come to New York for a year.
It's a great gig. Yeah.
It's a great gig, right?
Yeah.
Right. We're shorthanded. But what's problem is you get there and then you're, stuff is cut in half. So there's people that have, you know, thought about, you know, buying houses. They were making plans with that money. First off, I have no clue how you can do that. How you can tell someone you're paying somebody one number and then cutting it in half. But it's happening. And there's a lot of lawsuits that are happening because of this. So everybody just, hey, we're going into some heavy times financially, so make sure that you're saving up your little coins and your pennies because things are about to get weird, I think.
Yeah, and it's one of the, like, you know, the economy is so, obviously, you know, it's already affecting some professions, you know, but it's also one of those things, too, where I think it's just, I always, whenever I hear kind of these economic stories, it really kind of makes me think about my relationship with like worry, you know, and like the relationship between like being proactive and cautious to being consumed to, you know, honestly catastrophizing, right? To being consumed with the worst case scenario in a way that goes beyond, you know, self-protection or, you know, or caution to, you know, totally consuming your ability to just enjoy your day-to-day life. Like, because I think we've heard a lot of these stories, but it doesn't, you know, as it pertains to the economy, and I'm not saying they're invalid or that we shouldn't be, you know, talk about them. But I think, you know, it's not just with economic stuff, like sometimes like the environment or climate change or something where I think, especially as like Christians, right? Like, you know, the understanding that tension that often relies into being wise about the future and protecting yourself and your family and your, you know, personal kind of financial health or physical health or whatever it may be to being consumed by, you know, just thinking about avoiding the worst case scenario. It's an awkward line sometimes. I don't know if you guys struggle with that, but it's definitely something I've tried to reconcile with the older I get.
Right. You're talking about the balance between the fear of everything falling apart and then also being cautious with your future.
Yeah, like,
it's
exactly.
Like that middle ground.
It's a real tension.
It is a tension. And I know that we obviously skew younger because we're relevant, right? So we're staying in with pop culture. But for everybody that's out there, this is not financial advice, but I'm going to tell you what's really worked well for me is I try to have 6 months saved up of an emergency fund. So if things go wrong, I'm able to pull from that. That helps release some of that tension. And then also making sure that I'm constantly beyond that, putting money away, because we never know what's going to happen. I've had at least 3 friends hit me up and say they've lost their jobs because they were in tech. And then now, you know, tech is starting to downsize because growth isn't happening. And, you know, it's really important. I think there's a balance, right? We don't want to be afraid of the future, but at the same time, we want to be wise with our money. We don't want to take all of our money and just blow it on foolishness, because anything can happen. So,
and what's happening is, I mean, it's cyclical. The economy is cyclical. And when bubbles happen and prices get inflated or stock prices get to all-time highs and all-time highs and all-time highs and all-time highs and all-time highs, guess what? The market's going to correct itself. And I think the people who like rode the wave during COVID and thought the good times would never end are, you know, crypto and all that stuff. I think obviously they're getting caught by surprise. But I think a lot of us saw that bubble being created and just knew that things would kind of self-correct eventually. You know what I mean? Like, housing prices can't go up 40% a year, year after year after year,
right,
and be unaffordable for anybody to buy a house without the market correcting itself. You know what I mean? So what's good is whenever this happens is like, so Jesse, he and I have been friends a long time. He's more prone to worry. I'm more prone to Enneagram 7, if you know how they handle trauma and stuff. I ignore painful things and focus on fun, good future things, right? I'm like, I like don't deal with what we're actually going through. You know what I'm saying? So like Jesse's worried about the unknown and I'm like, who cares? Cause good things could happen. You know what I mean? So it's like we balance each other out. But for me, the good thing about the market correcting itself is prices will come down and then, you know, like the kind of normalcy will get restored. But if you look historically after every major recession, the housing crash in 2009, etc., innovation happened. You know, like people who lost their job in one sector went and launched companies over here that changed everything. You know, like they got forced out of life as usual. And that's where innovation and change can happen. And that to me is exciting. So yes, we need to be wise, be cautious, whatever. But also if unexpected things happen to your career or your circumstances, look at that as an opportunity, like saying like, okay, God, what do you want to use me to do for the next 10 years? And like, maybe that pivot will change the rest of your life. And that's an opportunity for good. So anyway,
I listened to a really interesting interview this past week. It was Chuck Klosterman, the, you know, kind of culture writer and kind of, you know, culture thought leader, and the Atlantic writer, Derek Thompson, who has a podcast called Plain English. But basically the premise of the interview is culture getting more negative? Like it just feels like humanity is getting more negative. And they were wrestling with this idea of everything in my life is fine, but it seems like everything actually in the world sucks and is hard. And people can say, well, how's the economy? And it's like, well, the economy's terrible. Well, how are your personal finances? Well, I'm fine. You know, or, hey, what do you think of the president? Oh, the president is terrible. Well, how does it affect your life? Well, nothing negative in my life. Or it could be any of these plug and play issues where, you know, it really, like, it was a fascinating conversation. They really kind of got a little Gladwellian and sort of their understanding of why human psychology has a propensity to jump on the negative, you know, as opposed to, you know, collectively focus on the positive. Like there's a lot of cultural factors that play into it, but it was a really interesting reminder of like, hey, just because everyone is tacking one way, and it just has to be the economy, because I don't want to invalidate, you know, the, you know, basic economic observations, right? That are probably accurate, but it's just collectively we have a propensity to really be obsessed with negative outcomes so much to the fact that it distracts us from the reality of the positivity of our own lives sometimes. And that's the one caution that I would give to people is like, hey, be solution oriented. Like to Derek's point, be proactive, save some money away so you don't have to worry, you know, like think about ways that, you know, policies can be implemented that, that can, you know, offer hope for something like climate change or peace or, you know, the elimination of poverty and things like that, instead of just being so consumed by what could go wrong, you know?
Jamie, I'm interested to hear your take as a woman, business owner, entrepreneur. Like how is this season look for you?
Well, I'm like the exact opposite than a lot of you guys is that like I'm a very like strong personality person, but when it comes to money, I tend to, my default is to put my head in the sand and not think about it. So that works fine when you have a spouse who can do it all. But then you wake up one day and you're like, I actually should know what's going on with our finances. You know, like I don't want to be a woman who has no clue what's happening with their finances. And then when I started my own company, I would let Aaron do it. And then in 2020 is when I had to go like, oh, I actually need to be in charge and I actually need to know what's going on. So the past 2 years have been super uncomfortable for me in having to learn about things and manage money in a way that I've never wanted to before. But I feel like I'm like a grown up now at 44, you know, trying to figure things out. But I also am like Jesse, I'm like a worrier. And so that's why I've always been like, I'll just put my head in the sand. I'll let Aaron take care of it. Because if I know too much, I'm going to start to worry. So it's been an uncomfortable tension for me to step into of caring and thinking about planning for the future and taking care of finances in the present. So it's, these conversations make me super uncomfortable. I don't like talking about money. It makes my armpits start sweating. I get uncomfortable. I don't like it, but I've had to. So it's been weird for me the last couple of years.
Okay, I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't want to bring up all the sweat that we're seeing all over your shirt. I thought you were working out.
It's literally oozing out right now. We see like there's like a waterfall of sweat.
I'm not sweaty talking about y'all's money.
Her hat has that sweatband.
Jamie, pro tip. I'll tell you what it takes because I'm the same way. It stresses me out. I start pacing around like, so overwhelming. I find if you say doll hairs instead of dollars, it offers a little playful twist. Like,
how many doll hairs listen, do we make?
We owe the, you know, because the transmission went out, we owe the mechanic 700 doll hairs.
Yep.
Okay, that's funny. No big deal. Exactly. No, but seriously, we owe $700.
Yep. I think mine comes when Aaron and I were first married. We made like, I think our first year, like collectively together, like $17,000. Like we never had a lot of money when we were for our first couple of 10 years of marriage. And so I just didn't want to know. I was like, if I just don't know, then I don't have to think about it. And up until we've been married 21 years, up until the last like 5 years, I was like, I didn't even know how much salary he made because I was like, I don't even want to know. And I don't think that's good or right. And I've come a long ways, but that's where I always came at money. It just made me uncomfortable.
Have you talked to your counselor about this?
Like I'm doing it right now, you guys. I'm getting open and vulnerable with a few friends. Nobody else. Just
you. You need to have a serious conversation with Aaron and be like, Aaron, I need to know exactly how many doll hairs you
How many earned. Doll hairs do you make?
All right. What do you have, Jamie?
All right. We're going into New Year, first show of 2023. And so a little bit of look back a little bit is sales of virtual reality headsets in the U.S. declined 2% last year. So Metaverse, the VR headsets, the sales shrank in 2022. Do any of y'all have a VR headset?
My son does for gaming.
Your son does for gaming.
It makes me sick. Like I get motion sickness.
Nauseous. Okay, Jesse, do you have one?
No, because the fear of looking ridiculous in my own house.
But you're all alone.
Yeah, that's what you think. But you can't see that you're in there with those little wands. Right. Or the little controllers in your hands and the mask on and you're like feeling it looks like you're like swimming in Jell-O in your own living room, kind of moving awkwardly. And you're like, oh, I'm in my house alone, just exploring this weird netherworld on Mark Zuckerberg's, you know, metaverse. Little do you know, there's people standing in the doorway just laughing at
you.
You know?
What's interesting about that it declined last year is like, think about going into last year. He was betting the future of Facebook and Meta on the explosion of VR. And not only did it not happen at all, it went backwards. That is insane.
Yeah. Which, you know, we're talking about like things. A lot of doll hairs.
Did you see his personal wealth dropped 70% last year? It went from $120 billion to $40 billion. And that's because
oh my god,
it's because Meta stock dropped 70% because VR his leveraging everything on VR did not pan out, and so like Meta's crumbled.
I'm not gonna cry for someone losing 70% of their wealth and they still have $40 billion. Like, guys.
Yeah. But it said that, like, in 2021, VR had an amazing holiday year. Like, they it was like, we're up and up, and here they go. And so Zuckerberg was putting all in that. And so many other...
so many people bought it on the early hype and the promises that it would change your life. And then they're like, okay. And then kind of played a game, and they get it. And then they put it in the corner and never used it again. Then, and like, nobody's going to buy another one. I mean, that's it. We tried it. It was stupid. Move on. You know,
right. Jamie, are you, what are your personal thoughts on VR?
I've always been like super against it. Cause it made me nervous. Like, because it, to me, it was just like, oh, you can like enter into this whole new world. I think it was a Black Mirror episode one time that really got in my head and freaked me out about it with this relationship that this person had. And so I've always been super against it. And then I went to a conference this fall, and believe it or not, this is the I was just like blown away. Someone was talking about how VR, someone in China was using a VR headset to join a like small group for a church, but this person like couldn't say where they were. And so it was like the gospel was somehow being used by it. So it kind of made me go like, okay, what is the what is the future here with this? And how's it going to go? Because I do think like there is some to this, like the future is moving this way. I don't want to be the old lady that's like, I don't like this. This is bad. And then, you know, not care about the future with things that are happening. I don't own one. I don't have one. We don't have any in our house. I'll admit they still kind of make me nervous. I don't know why. Except for that Black Mirror episode really got to me.
I wonder if, because I look at you know, our time spent on social media, our time spent watching television and media, I feel like we're already in the metaverse. Like TikTok, all of that, that's metaverse. You just don't have VR goggles. I don't think you need VR goggles to be a consumer of the metaverse, because the metaverse is just literally, you know, being inside of a virtual world. Like everything on TikTok, all of that, it's all
But it's all I went virtual. To a business conference this fall as well, and they were talking about how so many companies will be using it for like meetings. And I didn't understand it, but you're like a person and you go around.
It's so stupid.
That's the point I wanted to make, is like the value proposition. Like if it's for gaming or you want to watch Avatar or whatever, cool. Like, you know, fight Darth Vader. All right, cool. You know, the value proposition was, this is going to change the way we do business.
Right.
Could you imagine being ridiculous. A manager working remote? And it's like, hey, Phil, we need to see you. Come on into the virtual meeting. And like Phil walks in and that goofy little, can you imagine having to discipline someone who's a disembodied avatar head with some goofy Hawaiian shirt on in a virtual meeting room? It's like, Phil, take a seat. You took your shirt off and swung it over your head at the Christmas party. And we're responsible for numerous HR violations. We're going to need you to clean out your desk. And he's like some sort of avatar head. Like, can you imagine just how awkward that would be to discipline? So
with like Guy Ferrari spiked hair on his avatar.
Yeah. Yeah. Please turn in your badge. And they like,
I just got a visual.
Here's my prediction for where this is going to go. I think Zuckerberg is wrong and Apple is going to be right, because the Apple headset is probably coming out later in 2023 is the rumor. It's supposed to be late 2022. And what it's going to be is mixed reality and not virtual reality. So it's more on the augmented reality side of things. And so to me, you talked about the value proposition.
What does that mean, Cameron?
So it'll be a mixture of your physical, what you can see physically with a digital overlay. So let's say, for example, the commercial, you talk about the value proposition and the commercial setting I have on glasses look like normal glasses. I walk into a store and I can see promotions and sales and prices because they know me and everything is tailored to me. I'm driving and I see, you know, billboards and I see things on the physical universe that are digitally overlaid for
that is
me.
The last it's so thing we weird. Need. Hey, look, Cameron, people can't drive and we don't even got that, bro. Right. Last thing I need. Right.
Advertisers
is
would
for
love this, though.
A Quiznos that's the thing. To pop up while I'm driving down the street on my Tesla.
So that's where the value proposition will come in, is that people will be able to make money on it. Now, here's the scary part. So let's think about, you know, like, oh, that sounds awesome. I get deals and, you know, they know I love Nike. And so Nike, you know, shows me you're going to love these dunks and here's a good price for it. But what if you're a customer that that brand doesn't want and they discriminate and you walk into that store and they show higher prices because you're not a customer that they want in there. And so all of a sudden there's a slippery slope of, you know, that AI could actually be biased against, you know, certain people groups and things like that. And that's dangerous. But
dog, please don't tell me racism go make it into the VR, bro. Please,
the metaverse. Dog.
Yeah. The last thing I need to know is that I'm going to get in VR and it's going to be like, can't sit here.
I mean, that's kind of what the slippery slope is, but
not the antebellum Southern lady telling me I can't sit next to her in the NBA 2K lobby.
But think about this. Like, I think what Zuckerberg's tried to do with VR is like early, like BlackBerry. But when Apple comes out with their mixed reality headset, it's going to be iPhone. And all of a sudden, it's going to make sense to everybody and it'll go mass. And VR will be left behind is my gut. Is that VR is stupid.
So you think VR is out? You think VR is out? That's not the path.
We'll see how this episode ages 2 years from now. But my gut is VR is going to not be usable because the value proposition is ridiculous other than gaming. I think it'll be a gaming experience and nothing more. And then I think mixed reality will be our everyday life, change how we live and communicate and have entertainment, social media. I think mixed reality is going to be the direction of the future. So
I'm becoming more and more analog. Well, everything, every new development, it's like a pet peeve of mine is like SUVs that have a trunk where you have to press a button for the trunk to close. You know, how hard is it? Let me just slam it down. And every time I go and I'm with like a friend who has one, they're like, dude, you're going to burn up the motor. I'm like, why does your trunk have its own motor? Like, can I just slam that thing?
I'm with Derek. Hold up now. For those of you that don't know and don't follow me on Instagram, I just got a Tesla Model Y. Jesse, you analog close my Model Y, bro, we fighting.
I got arms. I got arms. I can close it. I don't need to figure out.
Push the button, Jesse.
It's too much. It's too much. You know, technology on things that could easily function with an analog understanding of how it works. That's
okay.
Sorry.
To your point,
push the button, Jesse.
Jesse, I think like not the trunk scenario that you gave us, but the desire for analog is an undercurrent happening. Obviously, we know about vinyl, and that's the primary revenue generator of physical music sales is vinyl and da 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 da. And me and my son have a huge vinyl collection and we love vinyl. But the Barnes & Noble just announced that next year they're opening 38 new stores. Barnes & Noble is expanding. Wow. Local bookstores have announced record profits of the last 3 years. And it's like people are going back to the physical. People are going back to holding a book in their hands. They're going back to the local shop where they have recommendations. And it's not just mass curation from Amazon, but it's personal. People want the tangible, just like Jesse's saying. And I think you're going to see a divide in culture between the analog and the embracing of like mixed reality and going all in and what tech can do for us. But then also like, I need the tangible. I need relationship. I need community. I need analog.
Well, think about it. Like all these kids, like, do y'all remember the feeling of going to buy like an actual album that you love?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it's nothing like that. There's nothing comparable to that. Like just going in and just being like, oh, I'll download that. Like that. There's nothing like that. I think that's why Taylor Swift broke all those records. It's because she has all of these analog experiences, but I'm even like, I've been studying a lot of like social media marketing, and what's happening is people are like, the whole idea of the viral moment and all of that, obviously people will go viral, but what marketers are saying now is it's about building actual community with your base. Mm-hmm. Like not people are over a look, they're getting over the shallow swipe up, swipe up, swipe up just to swipe up. Yeah, they do that for entertainment. But if you actually want to impact people, it's about building community, which would make sense because we've been starved for community, a lot of us, since the pandemic started. So the idea of, going out to Barnes and Noble, reading a book, starting a book club at the local bookstore, or starting a book, like it makes all the sense in the world to me, you know?
I just want you guys to know, I'm going to say it here. This is the first episode of 2023. My biggest dream in life, literally, is to own an independent bookstore. That is on my list. And I said I'm going to start thinking about it seriously when my last two kids go to college. So they graduate in 2024. So I'm ready.
What's the name of it?
Parable.
Oh, that's dope.
Parable was a Christian retail chain.
Oh, it was? This is not a Christian bookstore.
It is a Christian bookstore.
Oh, it was.
It went out of business. It was like Parable was a national chain. It was like Family, Lifeway, Parable, and Mardell. So you might want to rethink that.
I'm not set on. I haven't done anything. I might want to rethink the name. But shout out to my favorite local bookstore in Waco, Texas, Fabled. But that's my dream in life. I want to own a bookstore.
There you go.
A bookstore slash wine bar.
Just put an S on it.
Parables.
Put an S.
Parabola.
On it.
Call it Parabola. All right. Well, that'll do it for Slices.
Parabola.
All right. Stay tuned up next. Derwin Gray joins us. Listening to Always or Always, it's VV. I don't know if it's Always or Always, just it's German. The song is After the Earthquake.
Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
Our guest today is Dr. Derwin Gray. He's a pastor, author, and friend of the show. We've talked to him many times over the years, but in this conversation, we want to discuss how the church can be reunited after years of divisiveness. I mean, listen, we're in 2023 now. We are moving forward, right? We had a couple rough years in the recent past, but 2023, fresh start, let's move forward. How can the church be reunited, and why it's important to reach across the aisle for reconciliation, even if no one else is? Here's our conversation with Dr. Derwin Gray.
What in your experience, in your research, in your writing is maybe a way that you have seen younger Christians who do care about racism maybe still going a little bit awry in how they address it? What are some of the misconceptions or maybe even well-intentioned flaws in their own level of organization, justice, concern about this issue?
Yeah, great question. First of all, before I get to that, I want to look at the positive. I would say the positive is this. Young believers have, for the most part, multicultural friends, and they know people who are different. And they have this intuition that there's a better way to be a Christian, that is more loving, that is more insightful, that is more Jesus-y, right? So I do see that, and I'm so, so hopeful. The negative that I see is, instead of thinking that the Bible and Jesus has an answer, they go to sociological things. Now, sociology has its place, but the theology is the queen of all sciences. I want to see people, young people, be able to do what I just did in communicating a theological case with cultural awareness to how we can be the people of God. What I've seen, this is what I've learned. When I preach and teach to white audiences, and our church is probably 55 to 58% white, my exegesis and hermeneutics of scripture has to be phenomenal. Because a lot of white people are skeptical to these types of conversation if it's not located in the sacred scripture. And so my exegesis of the text, my understanding of the gospel and historical theology with culture builds trust. Like, I don't use buzzwords like white privilege. I don't use those words because they're unhelpful. So I use theological tools to get people into the story of God so they can begin to see with God's kind of eyes. And so I want to encourage young believers who have this heart is Jesus has something to say about it. I want to highlight what he said. I want to highlight what the early church did. We have an ancient and beautiful faith that from the beginning was a multi-ethnic faith. Let me give you an example. In Acts chapter 1, verse 8, Jesus tells the disciples, go to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, outermost parts. Okay. So he said, go to the Jews, go to the Samaritans. Those are that's enemies. It wasn't until Acts chapter 8, verse 1 that the Jewish believers went. And Philip went to Samaria and was leading people to the Lord. And then he met an Ethiopian eunuch. Before the gospel went to Europe, it went to Ethiopia. An Ethiopian eunuch was baptized. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, we have an ancient and beautiful faith. Can you imagine Philip, this Hellenistic Jew, hanging out with Samaritans? I'm like, man, what is this Jew doing here with us? He's breaking down barriers. He's proclaiming the gospel. And so I want the young people to know, like, I'm all for cool and hip, but understand this. When I'm just going to preach just a little bit to Tyler now, and then I promise I'll be done. Cool and hip Christianity does not help when you're laying in bed with cancer. Cool and hip Christianity does not work when your marriage is hanging on by dental floss. We have something that's eternal and ancient and beautiful and true and powerful, and God wants you to experience it.
I'm sure you've experienced this. We hear about it all the time. Younger Christians who care deeply about racism and they feel like their churches don't. They have tried to get their church leadership, older believers, other Christians on board to march with them in the streets, to sign up in local communities. And they just, not only are they ignored, they're oftentimes ostracized. They're told, this is not, we don't deal with that. And now they feel like, well, maybe the church just isn't the place for me or for this conversation. Yep. What do you say to these people?
What I want to say is this, is I want to say, precious ones, Jesus's bride is still his bride, and some elements of the bride is sick and weak and distorted. Please don't leave his bride. Go find a place where you can fit. And this is what I do know. One of the reasons why there are so many people talking about racial justice now is because the young people did hit the streets. And then pastors started to take notice. When I marched in a Black Lives Matter protest, listen, I don't endorse Black Lives Matter, the organization. But what I want to know is, why wasn't the church the one leading the charge? Why did a secular organization have to lead the charge? Where were we? So I was marching, not in honor of the organization, but because Black lives do matter. Now, do all lives matter? Yes, of course. But in this country, Black lives have not been treated like they have mattered. In the Deep South, they call it strange fruit, because back in the day, Black people were hanging from trees. So let's don't act like Black lives have always mattered. For the 400 years of this country, it's only been since 1954 that there was some measure of equality in the law book. So let's be honest, historically. So I marched in it, and one of the things that I saw, Taylor, was this. I saw white people. There were more whites than blacks. I saw white people. I saw black people, I saw young people, old people, Asian people, Latino people, and I thought, number one, this looks like Transformation Church. I thought, number two, why does a Black Lives Matter protest have more ethnic diversity than the church? So I want to encourage you, don't jettison Jesus's church. Continue to learn. Hey, listen, I'll help you. Send me an email. I'll help you find a church where you are. Become a part of our church online. We're doing microsites. We want to see Jesus glorified, but don't allow people to distract you from the person of Jesus Christ. And we need you. Like, you guys matter. Like, those of you in your 20s and you matter. God wants to do a work in you. And as an older, bigger brother in Christ, I want to help you. And so I hope that my book can be a means of helping you discover your faith afresh. I've often heard it said that bad religion does way more harm than an atheist ever could.
That was Dr. Derwin Gray. Stay tuned. Up next, it's the game that I told you is an audio extravaganza. Don't miss it. It's the first of the year. It all seems so clear, 'cause you're here with me, close to me. I want you to know, I love when you show that you care for me. You're listening to Kuko. The song is First of the Year. It's a little more downbeat than I usually play in the breaks, but come on, it's called First of the Year. This is our first show of the year. I had to shoehorn it in there, you know? All right, it's time for the audio extravaganza, otherwise known as
1 second rewind.
We're going to do something a little different. So 2013, 10 years ago now, was a good year for music. And we want to test y'all's knowledge of 2013 hits. What we're going to do is we're calling it the 1 second rewind. That's the name of this game, is the 1 second rewind. What we're going to do is play 1 second of one of the Billboard Top 100 hits from 2013. And then you will have to identify the song. And we're going to do several rounds, all right? Does that make sense? You're going to hear 1 second and then see if you can guess what the song is. Now, these are not obscure. These are Billboard Top 30. These are all very big songs, okay? So, but 2013, and it's going to
show. Just 1 second.
1 second. Yeah. 1 second to see if you can get it.
All I need.
All right. Here we go.
All right.
We got 4 rounds. Okay. Jesse, you're up first. See if you can guess the song by this one clip. Here we go.
Drank, pull up, drank. Kendrick, swimming pools.
Oh my gosh.
The easiest. Why you ain't give it to me so I could get the points?
All right.
There we go. Yes, it's swimming pool. It's swimming pools, Kendrick Lamar, right?
That's right.
Michael Bolton record is what I'm going to
There you go. All right, pull Jamie, you're up. Right. Here you go.
Oh, okay. Shine bright like a diamond. No, Derek, that's not it. That is it, right? Shine bright like a diamond. Who did this? Do I get a clue?
You don't know who sang that song?
I'm terrible with music. I'm just terrible with music. I mean, shine bright like a diamond. Garrett, give me one clue. The first letter of their name.
I can't do it.
I won't take the point.
Because I'm trying to beat you.
All right, play the clip, Jason. You're right that it's called Diamonds. The artist is obviously Rihanna.
Isn't she playing at the Super Bowl this year?
I feel like we give it to her. We give her half a point.
Don't give it to me. I don't deserve it.
Half a point.
I don't deserve it because I'm really, really bad at this game.
You got half a point because you got the... You do know that.
Jamie, you should have just said shine bright like a diamond. It just moved on. Don't even...
That's
you
what
even
I did.
Say you didn't know. But you said
she gets half a point.
I think we give it to her.
Half a
point. It's called Diamonds. She was right. Half a point. Done. Okay, it's Rihanna. All right, Derek, here's your clip.
Started from the bottom, now we here. Drake, next.
Started from the bottom, now we here.
Started from the bottom, not the whole team. Ooh, that's my joy.
You believe that was 10 years ago? All right. Jesse, round two. Right now it's 1-1, and Jamie has half. All right, here we go. So round two, Jesse.
Everybody's like, it's Lord of Royals.
I would have never got that.
We don't care.
Jesse and I saw her perform this at Lollapalooza that year. All right, he got it. Jesse got two.
I like that song.
It was a great. It was a good year for music. All right, Jamie, you're up. Here we go. Play it one more time.
I know it, Derek. Do you know it?
You play
waking up.
Oh, okay.
Checking out on the prison bars. This is it, the apocalypse.
Whoa. I'm waking up.
I feel it in my bones.
Play it, Jason.
I'm waking up to ash and dust. I wipe my brow.
I do like the song.
Imagine Dragons, right? Radioactive.
Imagine Dragons.
Radioactive.
Yep.
Imagine Dragons. Radioactive. Number three song of the year in 2013.
I like that song.
That was my joint. I used to love that joint.
All right, Derek. Here's your clip.
Let's get it.
Do it again.
Play it again.
Kiss me.
Yeah.
Just me.
All I heard was kiss me.
Jason, can you play it one more time? Sorry.
Kiss Me Through the Phone by Soulja Boy. Go to the next
play,
one.
Play the whole clip. Play the whole clip.
Kiss me hard before you go.
That was
it's Summertime Sadness by Lana Del Rey.
I've never heard that song in my entire life.
Lana Del Rey, Summertime Sadness. It's a great.
Listen, so I like Lana.
Top 10.
I'm not a. I wasn't Lana fan.
We're already running late on this pod. I dropped some Lana Del Rey knowledge on Cameron. Blew his mind the other week.
Can
I do it real?
Say it. Tail. Yeah.
Okay. So Lana Del Rey just put out a new album, and she put up one billboard, and it's in the city of Tulsa, where Cameron and I went to college. And it's because her ex-boyfriend lives in Tulsa, and it's sort of like the Taylor Swift, like, stick it to the exes type of situation.
Sheesh.
And I was curious.
By the
way,
the album's not out yet. It's pre-promotion. It's coming out in February, by the way. Okay. Just FYI. Yeah.
Yeah, so her upcoming album, I should say. But either way, I was curious, having been a former resident of Tulsa, not a whole lot of celebrities kicking around town. And so I was thinking, okay, this person dated Lana Del Rey. I don't know if anyone watched Live PD, The Defunct, and I guess it's back on a channel called Reels now. And I was really into the show where police officers live commentate, like, you know, traffic stops and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And one of the three guys, I don't know if you guys watch NFL Red Zone, but it's that kind of vibe going. They got the dual box, the octo box for everything. You know, you're jumping in. One of the guys back at the studio, they're all former officers. The guy Sticks, that's what he goes by. His nickname, his name out on the street is Sticks. He was one of the main cops on the show. That was Lana Del Rey's ex-boyfriend, Sticks from Live PD. And that's who she's targeting with the new album. It's just by default, my all-time favorite celebrity couple.
How does Sticks from Live PD in Tulsa meet Lana Del Rey, who lives in LA? That makes no sense.
Probably a fan.
Wow. Well, there you go. All right. Two rounds in. Jesse's got two. Jamie has half of a point, and Derek has one. Here we go. Round three. Jesse, here's your clip.
That would be Robin Thicke and Pharrell's what's the name of the song? It's a terrible song.
Marvin Gaye, Don't Sue Me. That's the name of it.
Yeah, but it's hold on, don't tell me. I don't want the half point. It's
I already wrote down a half point.
No, I know the song title. It's something. It's terrible. Like, the implications of the song is terrible. Blurred Lines.
Yes, you got it.
Marvin Gaye, Don't Sue Me. That's what we're calling it.
Jamie, here's your clip.
All right, my turn again. Let's see how bad this is. I have no idea.
Do it again.
That was
do
like
it again.
Half the songs of the year.
It sounds like a dance fact. Club.
That's like 13,000 songs that had that.
Do it again. Just
one more time, Jason.
You have no idea?
I couldn't even. I don't even have. I've never even heard the whole thing. Before. You can do the
Harlem Shake. Harlem Shake.
It was a viral moment right there.
I just want Cameron to keep dancing.
That was a viral moment.
That's right. Sure. The Harlem Shake videos. They all did like crazy mm-hmm. costumes and junk. Yeah. All right. Here we go. Derek.
I have.
I know
nothing.
This actually.
Hit it, Jamie.
The Lumineers.
Yep. Hey ho.
I knew hey. One. Oh my ho, gosh.
So show me family, all the blood that I will bleed.
I love that song.
I have never heard that song in my entire life.
They're from like the Mumford and Sons coaching tree. Yeah.
The Lumineers, we saw them at Lollapalooza.
They're like JV Mumford and Sons. That's what I call the
All
Lumineers.
All right, Jesse, final round. Here we go.
Speaking of which, the Mumford and Sons, I Will Wait for You.
And I will wait for you.
Jesse just did like the Steph Curry three where he like turned around and walked the other way before it even went in.
Didn't even look.
Yeah, he just threw the ball Walked behind off. His head. It was crazy.
It's almost like I worked out of music magazine for
this
for
is true.
My adult life.
This it's almost like we saw all of these bands live that year.
Yeah, and professionally had to research them for interviews.
In 2013, I was like knee deep in Babies. So there's my excuse.
Oh, by the way, Knee Deep in Babies was a great band from that. I think, Cameron, didn't we see Knee Deep in Babies on the...
Knee Deep in Babies opened for Mumford that year. Yeah, Knee Deep in Babies. Yeah.
That would be the most player name for an R&B artist.
That is...
So what is
Nick,
this?
Nick Cannon presents the Knee Deep in Babies tour.
Yes.
All right, here's Jamie's clip.
I mean, I remember this because they had the like dance and stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I have no idea what it is. But I've heard that
Oppa
before.
Gangnam Style.
Okay.
Gangnam Style. Psy, man.
At the time, the biggest music video of all time.
Yep.
The first YouTube video to cross 1 billion views. Wow. Global sensation, Psy, Gangnam Style. All right, last one of round four. Here we go. Derek's clip.
What?
Mm-mm.
Is that a no, Derek?
I don't got it.
I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket.
I was listening to Kendrick.
Awesome.
I was listening to Kendrick.
All right. All right. Final score. Jesse, 4. Jamie, half. And Derek, 1.
1.5, Congratulations, by the way. 1.5. Cameron,
no, you just stole his. You stole his.
I got the Lumineers. That was his.
No, but that wasn't your turn. That was Derek's.
No, you didn't get one. You didn't.
You got
get
Derek's
one.
Turn.
You got mine.
Dang it. Okay.
You knew
if,
one
if
and a
half.
If
that's the case, then I would have 3.
Kendrick. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
I'll take a half.
All right, that'll do it for
1 second.
I like that. That was fun.
That was a fun game.
That was fun.
Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Dr. Derwin Gray for joining us. Make sure to check out his current book. It's called How to Heal Our Racial Divide. It's excellent. You can actually get a free chapter if you go to his website, derwinlgray.com. Also, head over to relevantmagazine.com every day. We're publishing a ton of stuff at the intersection of faith, life, culture, justice. Great stuff. If you're on social media, make sure to follow us on all the channels, posting regularly. If you aren't as prone to social media, or your algorithm doesn't show you our stuff on social media, you can sign up for our daily newsletter right there on the front page at relevantmagazine.com. It just sends our top 5 trending stories to your inbox every weekday morning. You should do it. Keep in touch. I mentioned this at the end of our Best Of show, our last episode. If you didn't hear that Best Of 2022, you really should. I mean, it was just like, it was something putting that together, like all the highlights of what happened last year. But at the end of the show, I teed up stuff that's coming, stuff that we've been working on, team and I are excited about. I cannot wait for you to see. I'm not going to repeat it. This plug is for you to go listen to the end of that episode if you didn't, because I kind of spilled the beans on some things that are emotion, some new stuff from Relevant, some exciting stuff from Relevant. Yeah, so go check out our Best of 2022 show if you haven't listened to it yet. Okay, on that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
I'm Derek Miner.
We will see you next week. Hey, everybody, we are moving our episode release dates to Tuesday and Friday. So we will see you next, well, Friday in a few days.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
The sugar crash is really devastating my insulin levels.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.